Good morning, everyone. My name is Alexandra Wong. I'm the Officer of Taiwan Affairs for the Organization of Asian Studies at the Elliott School. Thank you so much for all being here today. I'm just going to take a little time to introduce OAS, as we call it. So OAS is a student-led organization that tries to connect young professionals interested in Asia with professionals working in the field. We try to share cultural experiences, expand the academic experience, and try to connect DC policy community with the classroom. And in addition, I'd like to add that today we will be live streaming the event, and I think there's a few live streamers out there at this moment. And I'm going to introduce the director of the Seeger Center for Asian Studies. His name is Professor Benjamin Hopkins, and I would like everyone to welcome him. Thank you.
Thank you, Lexi. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us this morning for what is the final of our Taiwan conferences / roundtables for 2018. We annually do four of these, and I'm really happy to do today's. I'll just get into today's program, which looks to be really fascinating and slightly different from some of our previous conferences. Today we're here to talk about the Taiwan-US relations, enhancing the terms of engagement in media and business and trade. And I'll be chairing this morning's first panel, which is about media literacy and fake news. We have two fantastic panelists with us today, whose bios you can find in the program, which hopefully you all have a copy of. Maggie Farley is a former LA Times correspondent and is currently an adjunct professor at AU. She was telling me just before we sat down and started about the game, which is referenced in her bio, Factitious, which she assures me is PG, and is well used between 9 and 3, which means it's well used in schools, it sounds like. But I think we'll have some interesting conversation about fake news and maybe how we can all check that out on, is it factitiousgame.com. And Jessica Drun, who's a fellow at the Policy Watch Institute and was previously an associate at the National Bureau of Asian Research. So with that, I'll turn it over to our speakers, who are going to each present for about 20 minutes or so, after which we'll open the floor for questions. So to follow Jessica and then Meg.
Thank you. I'd like to start by thanking Deepa and Richard for the opportunity to speak here today and to the Seeger Center for hosting. I'd like to note that these comments are my own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any organization that I'm affiliated with. I was asked to discuss Taiwan's social media landscape and its vulnerabilities to outside actors, especially as it pertains to last month's local elections. I want to start by setting the stage and quickly going over the current state of cross-strait relations. Since the current DPP president, Tsai Ing-wen, was elected in 2016, China has terminated official contacts with Taipei and increased pressure on the island, including by poaching its diplomatic allies, squeezing its international space, and sending fighter jets near Taiwan. All this has happened in spite of continued reassurances from President Tsai that she is committed to maintaining the status quo. This is not enough for Beijing, which has called for Tsai to affirm the 1992 consensus, a vague formulation centered around the notion of one China, which was used by the previous KMT administration as a baseline for official contacts. At the same time, Beijing has pursued local avenues in engaging with the island. It has continued engagement with the KMT by rewarding KMT-held districts with economic packages and exchanges with Chinese officials at the local level. Beijing's aim has been to paint the DPP in a negative light, as unfit to govern, while bolstering the KMT as a more capable alternative. Its apparent approach to social media interference falls in line with this objective, to undermine Tsai and the DPP. So just how widespread is social media usage in Taiwan? According to statistics from 2017, 80% of Taiwan's internet users actively use social media. Facebook was the most popular platform with a 77% penetration rate. Mobile messaging app Line, similar to WhatsApp here in the States, came at 71%, Twitter at 21%. However, these platforms are used in different ways for political discussions. PTT, a bulletin board system not dissimilar to Reddit, is Taiwan's most popular platform for discussing politics. As of March this year, PTT had 1.5 million registered users with 150,000 active users during peak hours. Facebook comes in second, while LINE is harder to measure given that discussions are private. Twitter is used more by politicians to engage with audiences outside of Taiwan. Social media did not gain traction as a tool for political campaigns in Taiwan until the 2014 local elections, when Ko Wen-tse, the independent candidate for Taipei mayor, effectively used social media to rally support. The DPP's social media strategy in 2016's presidential and legislative elections were also cited as a reason for the party's victory against the KMT that year. These trends have been explored and assessed in China, with state media citing the statistics I mentioned earlier, as well as the advantages social media has provided the DPP in the 2016 elections. Chinese universities, such as Xiamen University, have likewise conducted in-depth studies of Taiwan's social media usage. All in all, this reflects an acute understanding of the role social media plays in fostering political debate on the island and in election strategy. There have been numerous instances of Chinese interference in Taiwan's social media. Ahead of the 2016 election, Chinese internet users gained access to Facebook, which is normally blocked in China, and spammed Tsai Ing-wen's official Facebook page with critical comments. Her page was again spammed in January 2016, as was the pages of popular Taiwanese media outlets that were reporting on the election. At this point in time, it was clear that the posts came from China. The comments on the Facebook pages all used simplified characters instead of traditional characters, included line-by-line repetitions of Chinese government slogans, and featured an unwarranted degree of animosity. Studies out of Taiwan, however, have seen efforts on the Chinese side to better blend in through a localization campaign. Such moves include converting text on account and messages from simplified Chinese to traditional, and learning to imitate local ways of speech used in Taiwan. A Taiwanese scholar has also noticed a strategy focused on swaying swing voters, targeting pro-DPP pages to weaken perceptions of support, and posting positive articles about the KMT, while adding Taiwanese friends on these platforms to come off as legitimate locals. A Weibo post was circulated that outlined a, quote, battle plan in January 2016 that more or less substantiates these claims. The post asked participants not to swear, to keep their emotions in check, and to focus on promoting anti-independence materials. As these efforts become more sophisticated, their effects begin to take hold. The most prominent and ultimately tragic example is from September of this year during Typhoon Jebi in Japan, which knocked out a bridge and stranded thousands of travelers at the Osaka International Airport. Rumors began to circulate and were amplified by traditional media in Taiwan that the Chinese consulate had managed to deploy a bus to the airport to assist its citizens, but were refusing to aid Taiwanese at the airport unless they affirmed allegiance to Taiwan. A public outcry ensued, criticizing Tsai, the DPP representative to Japan, Frank Xie, and Taiwan's de facto consulate in Osaka. During the fallout, the head of the consulate committed suicide. Afterward, Taiwanese internet users found that the original post came from an IP address in Beijing, and Japanese officials refuted the claim, asserting that the Chinese consulate did not have access to the airport. Again, all these posts are aimed at Tsai and painting her administration as unfit to govern, and convincing social media users and Taiwan's electorate that this is the case. There have been numerous other examples, including false claims on her government's approach to the sensitive topic of pension reforms, as well as an incident when there was flooding in Tainan, posts began to circulate claiming that Tsai was unsympathetic and refused to step into floodwaters to check on victims, despite photos later emerging disproving this. So in the aftermath of last month's elections, it's worth stressing that any interference from China would be hard to source, given things like IP spoofing. It is also difficult to weigh the impact against other factors that could have determined election outcomes. In spite of this, and ultimately in the end, Beijing got what it wanted. The KMT swept the elections, and the candidates that won have called for greater engagement with China. The statements out of the Taiwan Affairs Office likewise call for local level exchanges under the 1992 consensus, noting, and I quote, "With a correct understanding on the nature of cross-strait relations and the nature of exchanges between cities across the strait, more countries and cities in Taiwan are welcome to participate in such exchanges and cooperation. Moving forward to the new year, more KMT-held cities and counties will engage with China at the local level, while relations at the top remain frozen. What I think is important to note, however, is an unwillingness to draw parallels between the election outcome and potential Chinese meddling in Taiwan public discourse. Taiwan's government and the cyber firm FireEye have both cited strong evidence that China was playing a role. Yet, as the election results were unfolding, and even in the aftermath, there was little reference in Taiwan's mainstream media of any effect Chinese influence may have had on the outcome. Part of the reason interference campaigns are successful is because the societal and political divides are already there. The hyper-partisanship is already there. And we see this not just in Taiwan, but here as well. Authoritarian governments are able to localize their efforts and exacerbate existing tensions at relatively low cost to themselves. Perhaps the first step to addressing this issue is a bipartisan consensus through a working group or something similar that aims to work toward a solution. And any outside support should be disavowed, not encouraged, as undermining democratic institutions. Thank you.